Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. On the show today, we're looking at marriage and relationships over the age of 50. Two guests for you, Julia Mayer and Barry Jacobs. Both are clinical psychologists who've been married and practicing for about 30 years. They're co-authors of the book AARP, ARP, Love and Meaning After 50, The 10 Challenges to Great Relationships and How to Overcome Them. A fascinating book. They'll talk about common challenges in relationships as we age, how to be better talkers and listeners, and why it's important to spend time getting to know your partner as who they are in this particular moment. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. Do you feel like your relationship could use some rekindling, perhaps? How have you worked through some rough times with your partner? Love to hear from you. Maybe you've got some wisdom to share. Tell us your story at 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And again, we'd love to hear from you. Julia Mayer, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Barry Jacobs, thank you so much as well for joining us. Oh, we're not hearing you, Barry. Still not hearing you, but we'll get that figured out. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to start by talking to Julia. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write this book. You know, as a married couple yourself, Julia, how about you first?
Well, when Barry and I got to the point where our kids left for college and the house was a little quiet, we sort of looked at each other and thought, what's next? Who are you?
Yeah. Oh, man.
We thought, you know, we need to figure out what our relationship is now. You know, we've been together for years raising children. It was very child focused. And at this point, we really could move on to our relationship being much more about the two of us. And that gave us the idea to write this book.
Barry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I would just add, I mean, and we don't want to make it out that Julie and I were, that our own marriage was in trouble at that point, because it was not. But I think the question was, we were entering a new phase of life. We were actually in our clinical practices seeing lots of couples in their 50s getting divorced. And we didn't want to have any problems in our own relationship. So it was a question of how do we rethink our relationship, get to know one another in a different way, in a different phase of life, and begin, you know, intentionally taking steps to strengthen our connection as we go forward.
Yeah, that intentionally taking steps, I think, is something that a lot of couples just don't do. You just sort of let it slide. Is this a unique set of struggles to people in this age? Greg, is it no, Barry?
I think in some ways, yes. I mean, developmentally, yeah. We don't think about people over 50. We think about people growing up, you know, little children developmentally, but we keep growing and changing. And over 50, you start to come into contact with a whole lot of challenges that you probably didn't before that. I mean, starting with the emptiness, like I described, but other changes with extended family, children leaving, children returning. Certainly over the past year, there have been a lot of children returning. Financial changes, retirement changes. There's just a long list of, we have 10 in our book, list of challenges that really do affect people differently over 50.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would just say, and in our book, we talk about the fact that over a 20-year period, the number of folks over 50 who have gotten divorced has doubled. And for the folks over 65, it's tripled. And some of it has to do with the challenges of getting older and facing the last third of life. And some of it may have to do with the particular cohort that's entering their 60s and 70s now. And that's the baby boomer cohort, which may be a cohort that just happens to have a lower threshold for getting divorced than other cohorts.
Yeah, for sure. I can remember being back when I was working on my PhD, I got involved with a professor's study of communication habits among families. And so at part of the research involved having couples talk to each other about things. And without the specifics here, but anyway, for a lot of couples, of course, it was an artificial situation in some ways, but for a lot of couples, it was extremely hard for them to sit down and talk about specific things relating to their families. I mean, it was, people were suddenly realizing that they had never probably had never talked about those kinds of things, Julia.
Oh, definitely. What we find with couples when they find their way to our offices in particular, they are not used to speaking to each other. They don't speak their minds. They don't share their dreams. They don't share their wishes. They don't share their concerns. You know, they're used to talking about who took out the trash and, you know, who's doing the yard work, but not the really personal things that make the relationship meaningful and vibrant. And so that's really the real purpose of our book, is to help people get there, to have those kinds of conversations that make their relationship feel meaningful and have passion in it, not just sexual passion, but passion for the other person, because they're feeling like they're traveling through life together as a team.
And I just for the record, I take out the trash and do the yard work. But the fact is, I mean, it's been a tremendous privilege for me to go through life with Julie, and now as we really are looking forward to getting older together, how do we plan that accordingly? I mean, how do we do that in a way which is really going to not just strengthen our relationship, but enhance our individual lives, and deal with all the challenges of getting older, whether it be having health problems, having some different financial priorities, thinking about moving, having a different relationship with our children than we've had in the past. I mean, all those changes are things that impact us as individuals and as a couple, and so we have to think about frameworks that we can use to have those kind of conversations. Because exactly what you said, Larry. Spouses don't like to talk. You know, spouses oftentimes avoid things which might cause conflict, and then because you know who wants to have an argument, and so they then have kind of unspoken issues in the relationship that go on for years or decades.
Yeah, you know, one thing I liked a lot of things about your book. One of the things I liked is that you were able to draw on your experiences and have some concrete examples with, you know, obviously unidentified people, but couples. And that was, I thought, helped make each of those 10 areas that you were talking about easier to understand and kind of relate to. Maybe you could talk about, you know, probably a good idea to talk about how your book is organized, because that's part of it. There's also another part I like that had to do with little surveys that you have people do.
Yeah, we wanted to help people find a way to talk to each other that was comfortable and not aggressive and not confrontational. And so we have within the book, we have these little surveys where they can each do it separately and try to be honest about their feelings about a whole list of things. You know, for example, with regard to finances, there are so many issues that people can agree on or disagree on, and they don't even know it because they often don't talk about it. And so the surveys are a way to get all of those thoughts and ideas out. And then we ask the couple, as a sort of structured process in the book, to then sit down and talk about those answers that really differ, and see if they can listen closely to the other person, no judgment, no, not really any response even, just listen to the ideas from their partner and validate them. And then And then in reverse, do the same. And after they've heard each other, then they can work on trying to bring their ideas closer.
You know, I'm wondering that we had something similar back to my PhD back in the old days. We did something kind of similar to that, but it was still difficult. How do you have some tips for talking and listening? I think it's hard to listen sometimes. There's that desire to want to pop in and say, wait a minute. Some tips in that area? Maybe ask you both on that. Barry, jump in if you...
Sure, Larry. The biggest impediment to communication is to be reactive. You know, your spouse says a word and you fly into a rage because you've heard that word and it could be something like, you're garbage, or it could be the children. The fact is we have to decrease the reactivity in order to be able to listen well. And so within the field of couples therapy, there are, you know, some very kind of bread and butter techniques for really preventing people from reacting or forcing them to, you know, having exercises where the spouses have to listen to one another and then just reflect back what the other person said rather than reacting or responding to what that other person said. So certainly in our clinical practices, we make full use of that. But some of it also has to be a matter of helping the spouses understand that this is not about accusing one another of playing one upsmanship, but of devising solutions that's going to work best for both of them so that they're in this together rather than seeing themselves almost as antagonists or adversaries in a debate.
Yeah. Julia, anything to add there?
Yeah, you know, I've seen so many couples where they just avoided talking about things that might be tense. And by the time they get to it, they are very tense. And they may avoid it until they're up against the wall. Like the couple that I worked with where the husband had his whole retirement planned. He was going south and the wife was staying up here and they never talked about it. And when they finally did, they were both absolutely shocked and had to come to some sort of middle ground, which they eventually did. They travel back and forth between up here in the Pennsylvania area and the South. But initially, it was very shocking to them both that they'd gone for years and never even thought to discuss it.
Oh, man. Talking today with Julia Mayer and Barry Jacobs, they are the authors of Love and Meaning After 50, The 10 Challenges to Great Relationships and How to Overcome Them. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments or maybe your experiences to share. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer today. Christina Myshock, our engineer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about Love and Meaning After 50, the 10 challenges to great relationships and how to overcome them. That's the title of the book that Julia Mayer and Barry Jacobs have written. They're both clinical psychologists. Love to hear from you. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. How has your marriage or lifelong partnership changed as you've gotten older? What kinds of things have you tried to reconnect with? Hope you'll join in. Love to hear from you. Vern from Boyd called in to say that it's all about finding the right one from the beginning. Well, you want to find the right one from the beginning, but things change over time, Julia.
They certainly do. And I feel like we found the right one from the beginning, Barry, but I also feel like we've had our, you know, challenges. And even the best person that you could possibly find doesn't always understand you and doesn't always know what you're going through. And then things, you know, come at you sideways. Sometimes you suddenly become a caregiver or you have a sudden loss. And even a really wonderful partner team can have little glitches dealing with trauma, loss, grieving, caregiving. And there are such issues that can really challenge even the best couples.
I definitely want to go through some of the 10 areas that you focus on in your book. Every one of them, I thought, boy, these are spot on. And the first one, we kind of discussed it a little bit at the beginning, but this one of the challenges is about when the kids move out and we're empty nesters. Well, how does that change and impact couples? You have some good example in your book, I thought. Barry, maybe you could start on that.
Sure. I mean, the way really it impacts couples is really a question of focus. I mean, when we have two children, when our second child, our son, went off to college, the house got awfully quiet. And and then in the evenings, a lot of our previously, when our son was home all the time, a lot of the conversation involved him. And now suddenly he was off doing other things. And so just in terms of our day-to-day interactions, that was a big change for us. And we didn't have, our son there to be sort of the third leg in our ongoing conversation. And so we had to figure out ways of talking to one another directly. And that sounds like a small thing, but it can be a very awkward thing for spouses that haven't had conversations between themselves really for a long, long time. Julie, you want to pick it up from there?
Yeah, I mean, the couple in the book that we write about who are going through the empty nest challenge, what happens if you read through it is all sorts of other stuff gets uncovered. It starts out where they're so dedicated to their children and they see themselves as this sort of model family. And then as time goes by, what they learn is their relationship is not good. They're not close to each other. They have a history of some bad behavior on both their parts. And there's some resentments that have built up. And in order to really work on those things, they need to unpack them a little bit. And so a lot of times what happens with empty nesters is, even though in some ways, they're proud of their children for launching and they are looking forward to being close to each other, they may have some old resentments that piled up. They may have some things to work out. And it sort of hits them all at once during the beginning of the empty nest.
Yeah.
In some way, I'll just add, Larry, that, as we're kind of implying here, the kids have acted as a kind of buffer for tensions that may have existed for a long time. And so when the kids are out of the picture, the tensions come to the fore.
Well, the example of that you had in there of the father who just spent all the time with the twin girls in sports and was really gone with them all the time. And when they both, and they kind of leave at the same time. And there were a lot of resentments, I think, in there, as you talked about in the book, that developed because, for both of them, well, especially for the wife who,
she felt abandoned by him. She felt abandoned by him while they were raising their children because he was so involved with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone talked about going through a divorce and then dismiss it, now considering it again. Do you get that kind of, do you have those kinds of people come to you?
Where they want to get divorced or they've been divorced, but
then they want to get back together again. Maybe
you'd be surprised how many people do that. But part of the purpose of our book is to try to prevent those kinds of divorces because obviously when people care about each other over many years, they've built a life together. And even if it has its problems, it's certainly worth working on. But yeah, I've seen a few couples where even though they've been divorced, they're still close friends, which is nice. And if they want to get back together, okay.
They can work on that. Go ahead, Barry.
And I would just add to that, Larry. I mean, one of the things that we see sometimes is couples who are divorced, then one of the spouses gets sick, and then the ex-spouse will step in and become the family caregiver to the spouse who's now ill, that they still have a level of devotion to that person, even if they're no longer legally married, which is always interesting.
One of the areas that I'm sure a lot of people don't want to talk about when you get together with them is infidelity. That sometimes up with a lot of social stigma, of course, and lots of hurt feelings. But obviously, is a sign of underlying problems. How do you deal with that sort of thing in a relationship? And I saw how you brought it out with one couple in your book, but talk about that, Julia.
You know, the numbers are strange. I don't have them right in front of me, but there are up to something like around 20% of couples have infidelity during the length of their marriage. And oddly, those numbers increase in people's 60s and 70s. And so we thought it would be really important to talk about the issue of infidelity, because sometimes it never gets talked about in couples. Someone maybe they cheated 20 years ago and then it never gets discussed, but there's this feeling of resentment and lack of trust that stays in the relationship. And our view is that in most cases, it needs to be brought out. It needs to be discussed. It needs to be forgiven. You know, there needs to be the rebuilding of trust and a rededication to the couple. That's pretty much what I think people want to do. Infidelity is a mistake, but it doesn't have to blow up the entire relationship.
Yeah. And the example you used in your book was a couple that both had been at one point or another, and especially the husband was really surprised to learn that about his wife. And so you wonder how apparently they were able to kind of work through it, but it's not something you can get over with in next week.
No, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work along the lines of demonstrating trust. You know, once the trust has been broken, it has to be rebuilt. Both people have to be dedicated to doing that. That's what it takes.
Mark from Mequon called but couldn't stay on the line. He says once he reached retirement in his late 60s, that's when problems came up, especially when it comes to children of the grandchildren, looking for tips specifically about developing listening and empathy skills.
So we see the same issue come up a lot. It kind of falls under a larger heading of the couple's relationships with other family members, whether it be with their own children or with their grandchildren. And it's very important for spouses to talk with one another about what those relationships should be. And it becomes more complicated when there are second and third marriages and blended families and stepchildren and step-grandchildren involved. But this is a developmental task that couples need to think about. How involved are we going to be in the lives of our children? And part of that obviously is what the children want. But to what degree are we going to devote ourselves to our grandchildren? Are we going to be involved in caring for them? Or are we going to be traveling all over the world and seeing the grandchildren twice a year? There are some major differences between spouses and oftentimes around those basic questions. And so before it gets to that point of conflict, those questions need to be put on the table and discussed and negotiated. And sometimes some kind of agreement is found, and sometimes you agree to disagree, but at least there's an honest vetting of the question and accommodations are made. And so when people don't do that and there's expectation that, well, we're going to be traveling 200 days a year, and the other person says, well, no, I want to take care of my grandchildren, 5 days a week. that they can come a little closer together and really find a way of living together rather than living apart with different goals.
Hmm. Well, another person, and you know, we have many thousands of people listening to the show, and we typically get lots of calls, but I was suspecting that we wouldn't get a lot of people wanting to talk online about this because it can be such a tough thing to talk about. That's why I think your book is so valuable, because it gives people a way to talk about a lot of these things. Someone wondered about, wants to hear about, how as you get older, your looks change. How does that impact your relationships? And you address that, certainly, in your book, Julia.
Yeah, not just your looks, but your health status. You know, some people gain weight. Some people work out regularly. And that's another issue that couples need to work on together. If people really love each other and really trust each other and feel connected, looks changing, that's just part of getting old together. And I would hope that people can accept it. Although I would add, if couples decide that caring for health is really important, they decide that together, then caring for their health becomes a team effort. Both people exercise, they take walks together, they go to the doctor, they remind each other to eat healthy. And if that isn't the way that it works, what you can find, for example, in a couple where one person has diabetes but doesn't take care of his health, you might find that the spouse feels resentful that she may end up having to care for him later because he isn't doing that kind of care for himself that would keep him healthy longer.
Yeah. Yeah, the another person wondering, you know, sometimes the woman has a baby, it stays a little heavier. Maybe the man thinks he still looks the same as he did in high school. It can be hard to account for that or deal with that in a relationship.
So some of this really is about can the spouses each accept the reality of getting older and the fact that their bodies are going to change, their energy level is going to change. Can they accept those things about themselves, let alone one another? And if one spouse is intent on still being 25 years old forever, that will be a problem over time.
Dave called in with an experience he's going through. He and his wife have been going back and forth with divorce, never going through with it. He says that they both started with nothing finance-wise and focused on gaining wealth and gaining money as a couple. This was their sole focus. They never worked on communication or growing that relationship. Dave wants to do therapy, and the wife won't commit for 3 months. It's been a very challenging to go through, but Dave says the problem was the narrow focus of the relationship over time. Comment on that, Barry?
Yeah, it almost sounds like it's been, you know, they had a going business concern there, or less an emotional relationship, which is, you know, is okay. I mean, especially for folks that may have grown up in improper circumstances, that's really important. But having established security, a level of security, then a whole other set of challenges come along. And so how do they broaden the basis for the relationship? How do they find ways of liking one another, not just simply working well together financially? And in terms of getting folks into couples therapy, what we often try to do, because it's usually the man who's reluctant to go into couples therapy, not the woman, but we'll usually contract with people right at the beginning that we'll have two or three sessions, and then we'll reassess whether both spouses want to go forward. So spouses are more likely to commit to a small number of sessions and then kind of dip their toe in the water rather than to have a whole long, prolonged process, which may be emotionally painful for them.
I would add to that this couple, Dave, it sounds like they've avoided intimacy, maybe out of fear of being close, and focused so much on finances and money. And now they're at a point where it would be so much more meaningful for them to feel close to each other, and they just don't know how. And it may be that his wife is a little nervous about starting couples therapy because it's scary to start thinking about intimacy and emotions and feeling dependent on somebody and growing old. I hope she'll change her mind.
Yeah. Winter from Madison called, currently going through a divorce from a partner of 20 years, met as teens, had kids, but now in middle age, both had grown into different people with different needs, still friends and co-parents, just not a couple anymore. And wondering about tips for moving in collaborative ways as both perhaps recouple. Maybe with, you know, somebody new and so forth. Julia, let's go to you.
Yeah, it's nice that you're still friends. I'm glad about that. And, you know, we call it slow drift. People are in a relationship and their focus is on work. It's on children. It's on extended family, who knows what, friendships. And they grow apart. And they do sometimes get to a point where it doesn't really make sense to remain married because both of them would like to find a more loving, passionate relationship with someone else. And that's fine. And it makes such a difference if those two people can stay as co-parents, they can stay friends, and that they can work through differences as much as possible. They can use the techniques in our book, even if they're not married, to listen to each other and support each other. It makes a tremendous difference with regard to the children and the extended family. You know, you have graduations to go to, you have games to go to, you have weddings, etc. Why not go as friends and have everyone relax and not be worried about these two people who could be fighting for no reason? And that makes it easier to move on also. If you have all this feeling wrapped up in your ex, it's very hard to move on.
And I think, I mean, you know, spending all your time being angry at someone else is, it hurts you as an individual, I think, a lot more than the other person, for sure. And it just, the tension that builds up within someone for something like that is, it's to be able to let that go, I think, is, you would probably, you're nodding your head in agreement there, Julia.
Yes, letting it go is key. I'm sure that the two people in the couple have hurt each other in the past. Maybe they've even betrayed each other. At this point, you sort of want to stop and say, all that doesn't matter. I want to live my life as happily, as joyfully as I can. I don't want to be stuck in a mire of old resentments and anger. Life is only so long, you know?
Yeah.
I'll just add to that where it often becomes very challenging is when one spouse wants to leave the marriage and in a way has emotionally distanced themselves from the other. But the other spouse is still emotionally invested in it and is they're the one who is in the most pain as the couple break up, and that's an awfully painful situation for the spouse that is being left, and yet even with those situations, over time it's possible for them to rekindle a working arrangement, conversation. And even a friendship for the good of the rest of the family. And because, as you point out, Larry, it's not good for either of them to harbor, ongoing anger toward the other. It just blocks them in their own growth over time.
You know, there's one other area that's a little bit different, but I do want to bring it up because it's something you deal with in the book. Downsizing and relocating is a huge thing. I mean, I look at my own house and I've got, you know, a 3-story house with a basement. So I got a lot of stuff, and the thought of downsizing for me, just thinking about it makes me tired. And I this whole business of downsizing and relocating with a married couple, You have some great examples and discussion about it in your book, Julia.
It is a very difficult thing to do because and in describing your house, Larry, I think so many people have the same situation. Their house is full of their things. They might not even care about some of the things anymore, but they're the things that they've had for decades. And to sift through all of that feels a lot like a loss, and there's grief, and it's hard to do. It can be very painful. And sometimes couples aren't on the same page with downsizing. Sometimes downsizing means moving away and leaving your community, and there's another loss there. And starting new somewhere else, which can be a little bit intimidating. There's just so many parts to downsizing that involve some grief, some loss, some fear, that a lot of people do feel pretty paralyzed around it. It's a very challenging thing to have to go through.
Yeah, I'll just add to what Julia said by saying that people hesitate at downsizing because they don't want to admit that they're entering this new phase of life. It feels like they're entering the last phase of life, and they're not ready to see to be beginning to think about their life perhaps winding down. And so they hold on to the house. They hold on to what's familiar to them, and also what's familiar to them about themselves, about seeing themselves in a certain way, living a certain way, having a certain identity.
Yeah, I think it's better to look at something like that rather than life winding down, but life changing to a new something new and positive, Julia.
Well, you know what people say after they downsize? They're so relieved to have so much less stuff, much less to dust or vacuum, and you know, a smaller space. It feels more comfortable. Maybe they're not doing yard work anymore. It's a relief for most people once they get to the other side of it.
Any final advice for lessons learned you'd like to share about strengthening partnerships in the later years, Julia?
Yes. Don't forget, this person that you're with has spent years with you, and you have a major connection with them, regardless of whether you bicker a lot or have longstanding resentments or anything like that. You have a long connection, and it is worth preserving in whatever way. If you can work on your marriage and make it all the better, then what you've done is you've built this team to go through life with and feel really good, feel really good together. And even if you decided to separate and divorce, this is someone who's known you for decades. Maybe they've raised children with you. Why not try to find a way to have a positive connection with that person? Like I said, life is short and we should make the most of it. And if you have a partner and you can find your love for that person, it's absolutely worth fighting for that relationship.
And I'll just add that everything that Julia said is based on the quality of the conversation. People turning toward one another and being able to speak openly and honestly without fear of being attacked or being dismissed. And that's something that takes a certain risk. Sometimes it takes a little bit of instruction, maybe facilitation. But if people can turn toward one another rather than turning away from one another, that's when they begin to not just share thoughts about the past, but share thoughts about the future and plan for that future. So that that last third of life is as wonderful as perhaps the earlier times were, maybe even better.
Well, I think you give all of us a lot of help in your book, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Our two guests, Julia Mayer and Barry Jacobs, have authored Love and Meaning After 50, and the subtitle, The 10 Challenges to Great Relationships and How to Overcome Them. A lot of some great examples and some tools that you can use to find love and meaning after 50 in your relationship. And again, thank you both so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure, Larry.
Julia Mayer and Barry Jacobs, they've been married for 30 years, and they are both clinical psychologists. And again, their book, take a look at it, Love and Meaning After 50, The 10 Challenges to Great Relationships and How to Overcome Them. It's an AARP book as well. So great to have them with us. Well, let's say you're like me and you're single, and you are maybe thinking about dating again. And lots of people find themselves single later in life. We're going to be talking about that next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.
You're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up this afternoon at 12:30, it's Chapter a Day, followed by On Point. There's more Wisconsin radio for you later today after 3 on Central Time, here on the Ideas Network.
This afternoon on Central Time, there's been controversy in state government hearings when it comes to masks and the ability to join in remotely over health concerns. An open government advocate joins the show to share some thoughts. That's today on Central Time from 3 until 6.
Give the gift of unbiased news and informative talk programming to your friends and neighbors around the state by giving to Wisconsin Public Radio through your IRA or with a stock gift. You keep WPR going strong for years to come. Talk with your financial advisor or visit WPR.org/support to learn more.